Hey, hello, hello, everybody. Welcome to this week's call on Buddhas and Butterflies. We are heading into transformation of grief. We are working with this healthy role, which is working with dispersion, releasing, letting go, which right before solstice, we could not have timed this any better. Solstice is happening on Sunday morning at 8:06 a.m. MDT time zone. So you might have to do the time zone math on that one. And the idea is that when the darkest part of the dark begins to shift into moving into the light again, there's a beautiful myth, and I don't know it terribly well, but if you're ever keen to look up things around myth that you like, there's a myth around the holly. Oh gosh, I'm gonna mix it all up now. My brain just lost all the words. Well, that was a poor setup, wasn't it? The green something and the holly something. I'll find it and I'll send it out to you guys and talk about it next week as well if I can. And anyways, that myth talks about the changing of the seasons, and there's this idea that there's this opportunity for the two to go into battle, and they battle twice a year. They battle on the solstices. So they battle on winter and summer solstice, the other two being equinoxes, in case you're curious about the terminology there. And there's this idea that once in the summer, the holly, ivy holly person, she begins to win. And then the idea is that the green man, he begins to win in the winter one. And there's this ever battle between the two of them finding their battle grounds, and that's what's behind the changing of the seasons. There's these like mythical forces at play. Anyways, if you're into myth, I did a really bad job of explaining that all, and I will find the actual name of the myth. Oh, it's poking right at the very edge of my brain. It'll probably pop up right before the end of the session as well. Anyways, let's get into things. I know we've got, in addition to that, a really unique astrology time happening. There are all sorts of layers and imprints that are very quickly changing, and we're winding down for this numerological 9 year, and we're transitioning into the 1 year. We are also working with the winding down of the year of the snake as we're heading into the year of the horse. And when we go from wood snake to fire horse, there's an extra from that wood to fire. It's like wood feeding the fire. There's this extra like whoosh that can happen. So this year can often, at this time of year, and I think I've spoken to this before, is often a time where there's a tremendous amount of dissolution or release and preparation for the new to come in. Some of us might be feeling the new already, so you might are not so much feeling like the darkness going within. You might already be feeling the expansion coming through. And others of us might be thinking, like, when does this dissolution inwards, this contraction, when does this actually stop? So wherever you are on that spectrum, it's really normal to have all sorts of interesting emotional landscapes happening right now. And when we combine that with the traditional holiday season that's upon us and the various different ways that people interact with that, it can be a really intense season. And I'm sure you've heard this from many other people, but I'm going to invite you to, much like all the times in our sessions, to use it as a point of not just coming into awareness, but a point of being able to use as a touchstone to slow things down. And grief energy naturally does that. Grief energy is meant to bring things to a halt. It's meant to create stillness in the system, so much so that things can actually settle and release and let go. So there's a certain amount of stilling to the point of, sometimes it gets misinterpreted as I have to restrain things, or there's a restraint upon me happening, and I want to do something different, but I feel like I'm being forced to hold still or shut down in ways that I didn't really want to. And as we work with that territory, just see what's alive for you amongst your intentions for today's session and for what we're heading into. Okay, I did not plan on talking so much, but let's, the myth of green and holly, oh, Fiona says. Do you remember, like, there's other words to it, isn't there? Like the green something and the holly something? Okay, anyways, if anybody else knows it, please feel free to let me know. Okay, loves. I'm going to invite you to get comfy and cozy, settling out into a place where you can either sit or lay and be undisturbed for our time together. While you do that, it's on my mind, and I'm just going to say it now so I don't have to keep thinking about it all the way throughout the hour. I might mention it again at the end. Bonus points if I remember it twice, I figure. But the seasonal support session that is being offered on Monday will be happening at 9 a.m. Mountain Time. It's our extra bonus session for my mix-up earlier in the year where I screwed up my own time zone math. And this is my makeup session, as well as, in a way, the opportunity to just get a little extra care in. Again, I think this is the season for self-care, for going inward as much as we possibly can amongst all the other demands of the season, of our lives, of our own personal process, and the collision of that can be really quite something. So wherever you're at in that process, and maybe for some of you that's like it's your jam, you're vibing high, and it's quite something in a really beautiful way for you that's unfolding. And I'm going to invite you to then use that self-support, self-care to actually just like drink that in and soak that in even deeper, to drink that nourishment into your cells. So wherever you are on that spectrum, using that self-care to optimize your process. So we'll be taking a peek of that on Monday. And for right now, I'm going to invite us, as you're getting comfy and cozy, to connect to your breath. Every inhale, an opportunity to call in. To drink in life. To come alive. Every exhale, an opportunity to release. To let go. To make space. And every breath, an opportunity to sink a little deeper into that cushion below you. And if any part of that is pleasant, even neutral, taking time to savor it, time to drink that in. And time to really let yourself, gestate in it. And I'm going to invite you on purpose to scan either your outer eyes open environment, inner eyes open or closed environment. And go for a little bit of a tour throughout your landscape. And checking it out 3D, noticing all the things that feel pleasant, easeful, beautiful to be with. And let yourself pause on one thing in particular that captures your attention, just potentially a little bit more than the others, or it might stand out like a spotlight. And it might not even be a thing. It might be a space. It might be light, the interplay of the shadow coming in. It may be something else. And wherever your attention goes amongst it all, the invitation is to let yourself really pause. Name internally to yourself, or out loud if you want to, a few qualities that you really find quite useful, pleasant, beautiful to be with here. And whatever that thing is that you're drawn to, all the different qualities that you've named, the invitation is to let yourself savor those, like that piece of really expensive treat, maybe chocolate, if it's me. It's probably chocolate. For you, it might be something different. But letting yourself savor, letting it slowly, sensually linger and melt through your system. Notice how the body responds. Specifically to the beauty, the ease, the pleasant thing that you've been drinking in. And let yourself really savor the body, its response, as well as the object of your attention at the same time. And slowing things down here on purpose to let this gestate slowly through the system. I often talk about this as a fueling, a nourishment, a retraining in the brain to orient to things that are pleasant. It's also a stitching together of the mind and the body when we savor both at the same time. It's bringing them into awareness that they've never been separate without having to mentally understand anything. This is the opportunity to, in a way, embody, to inhabit, to go just a little bit deeper inside of yourself. Just for those of you that like explanations. We've been doing it this whole time all along. If that supports you in drinking in a little bit deeper, then enjoy. And if there's still mojo to savor there, feel free to stay with it. I'm going to offer these words. Thank you for the opportunity to gather here today. And thank you to all of our compassionate helpers, seen and unseen, that gather here with us. Thank you to all that's gone into this sweet moment of connection, to our families that created us, to the ancestors that created them, and to the lineage that's held it all. And thank you to the earth for nourishing, to those that have tended this earth. To the sky above, giving us space. The fire connecting us to the edge of the beyond. And the water connecting us to the very core of our bones, our essence. And thank you to the interweaving of the natural elements in this world for reminding us what it is to be authentically ourselves, naturally us. Om Shanti, Shanti, Shanti. Peace, peace, peace. Okay. As we start off today's session, and interestingly enough, I got a 4 and a 6 at the exact same time. And it's like we're looking at, let me just double check, make sure I got this accurate. Yeah, we're actually looking simultaneously at houses 4 and 6. So at the very same time, which is not something I see very often. I don't actually know that I've ever seen it before. In a way, that makes sense that it's possible. So houses 4 and 6 at the exact same time, even though I know we're in houses 7 and 8. Houses 4 and 6. So let's look at the commonalities between those two. And or the connection more so between the two of them. House 4 is very much about nourishment, it's about earth, it's about grounding. And house 6 is about taking in the, and I'm looking at house 4 primarily through the lens of the spleen meridian as I say that all. House 6 is very much about our discernment, our capacity to take things in that are nourishing and use them with awareness, use them with intelligence. So it's like directing the nourishment. It's not just a general inhaling of things that are nourishing. It's like a very narrowed, specified use of that nourishment to be in service to ourselves. So there's like a containment on it. There's riverbanks. If nourishment generally coming into the body was like a river, house four, house six might be like the riverbanks to guide it. So as we work with nourishment and its guidance, I would not normally speak about them in houses four and six specifically in those way, but it's more so through the lens of the spleen and the small intestine, just to be really clear. We're connecting that nourishment and that guidance into simultaneously both seven and eight, houses seven and eight, working with the core of the water elements through the kidney as well as the bladder. And the idea here is that our water element connects us to our very essence of our fluids and our bones. And as we work with drinking and nourishment all the way down to our fluids, it's actually connecting us into that primal, primordial state where we are gestating, where we are babes, where we are little teeny tiny bundles of cells developing. And we're working here at a time, this is interesting, I don't know exactly why yet, but we're going into the time of development before there was even awareness on board, which was like the very first separation. I may have blabbed about that at some other point in time. And we're looking at the just like the physical development, the unfolding of the system. And we're particularly looking at day 14, which in all honesty, I don't know a ton about. Day 15 is when the primordial heart is coming alive, and it's like day 14 is the setup in that foundation for what is coming alive within the, how do I say this? Within the landscape of the heart. And the heart being our center for so many things, our center for balance, our center for respect, our capacity for being received in a way that creates harmonious relationships from a place of dignity and connection, being an equal balance. Day 14 is also coming through, and this I guess I do know, as when implantation is like fairly well underway, like there's an embedding of things. There is an opportunity for the system to have that firm foundation. Okay, got it now. So it's working with that sense of firm foundation that is creating the bedrock for that primal component of the early stages of the primordial heart to develop. Okay, so it's looking at the attachment of the embryo at this particular phase, going into the feeling of either feeling really secure in life. And this is sort of throwing attachment theory terms out willy-nilly without necessarily doing a lot of background explanation of them. Some of you might be aware of them already. And I'm not going to spend a bunch of time on it, but it's also flying in the face of what attachment theory would say, which happens in theory when you are in your mother's or father's or caregiver's arms after you are born. And I'm going to propose that there's an earlier seed of that, and that is actually happening here and now. And so that security of that implantation, setting the stage for how secure it is to develop that safety, that dignity and connection being held in equal value in a way that holds the capacity for useful relationships and partnerships. And the idea is that that could either be secure, or if it wasn't very firm, that implantation, there might be some anxiety. There might be a sense also of it being like really not secure, and that could actually create avoidance. If it was sort of in between the two, there can be both anxiety and avoidance. So avoidance just means like we sort of shut down around things. We numb out, we collapse, we go like, nope, not I'm not even being open to considering that. And then as we look at those four potential options and setting the stage for however it is you particularly develop. So it's looking at those dynamics, and we're gonna run a seed tree on those developmental dynamics that were happening in utero on day 14. Okay, I have a new appreciation of day 14. And we're bringing in specifically to the prefrontal cortex, which is, by the way, I think this is really cool. The bundle of cells that connected you to your implantation on the endometrium of your internal uterus lining of your mom's womb is happening through the prefrontal cortex. It's happening from and for the cells that eventually form what's referred to as your high heart or the heart of your higher self. It's a part of you that has compassion, empathy, the part of you that has the capacity to really tune in to the set of circumstances that are before you in a way that doesn't assign blame or victim to any set of circumstances. So imagine whatever comes your way, being able to negotiate it without blame or victim. It's a tall order for most of us. So the idea here is that this bundle of cells is where we were connected into the uterine lining. So this is where the seizure is going to be running through your prefrontal cortex. Okay, so it's going to be running for the next 14 days. I'm going to do the math on that. What does that work out? It works out right into the end of the year. Really cool, right into New Year's Eve. And I'm just going to start with C, circulation of all the healing resources, including blood that carries our passion, nerve our communication, lymph that drains our toxins, gunk, waste, low self-esteem, overthinking, overanalyzing, along with chi or vitality, consciousness or awareness, right down to all the little guys, electrons, protons, solitons, neutrons, working with the sounds, the colors, the frequencies of all the chakras, major and minor, endorphins, hormones, and endocannabinoids, pardon me, that lowered inflammation, anxiety, depression, and help us to heal our nervous system and our immune system and really have an impact through the rest of our body mind. We're also working with the circulation of the balance of yin, which is the feminine essence of nourishment, and the yang, the masculine essence of protection. And we're also running hydration here, helping the cells to take in water and joy, releasing any impurities that no longer need to be here. It's followed by the D or the defrag, much like a computer defrag, taking out the junk that doesn't need to be here, and or like a spring clean, taking out the clutter that no longer needs to be here. What remains can be readily reorganized and utilized for healing. Then all of the R's, reevaluation, recontextualization, reprioritization, getting out of rock and hard place type of thinking, opening up the possibilities where it may have seemed like there was none before. Then integration, introspection, shift the underlying consciousness. Think of this as the release, the surrender, the letting go. Okay. As we run that seizure, we're also simultaneously bringing in hydration to, now, I actually don't know if this technically exists, but in like in a clear, defined anatomical boundary. But it's like the edges of where the prefrontal cortex meet the rest of the frontal cortex. And we're bringing in hydration to the edges, to the boundary of that, energetically, metaphorically speaking. And if there is like a very, I don't think there's like a clear fascial sheath or anything like that, but it's like where that sort of interplay of bridging happens between the prefrontal cortex and the rest of the frontal cortex. And it's like the information that I'm getting is like that's the first spot where that information of what's happening in the high heart gets spread or it gets sent out to the rest of the brain, and that's where like the beginning of the delivery system happens. So, fun fact, the frontal cortex of our brain governs how we move our muscles. It works with our motor movements and all the M's, muscles, motor movements. The frontal cortex works with that they say from a neurology standpoint, it bases those movements from the sensory input that comes in through the parietal lobe. I'm going to suggest that that's true, as well as there's something more than biology running the show. And if we take a look at what that means and what that is, I'm going to suggest it's sort of like a landscape that we're working with here in Body Talk. And the idea is that there's this awareness of the information coming from the high hearts, spreading the compassion, the empathy, etc., through to the movements of your muscles, through to how it is you flow in your body, how it is you are integrated in your particular unique expression of coordination. So it's not if you're coordinated or uncoordinated from like a whatever judgmental standpoint. However you're coordinated is perfect for your system, and it's working at the flow of that happening uniquely through your particular muscles, which is coordinated through the nerves that innervate those muscles, that are getting that information from the frontal cortex spread out to the motor nerves. And this is, quote unquote, your muscles, your center of action. This is how we're taking action in our world. So it's working with the guidance of action. And we often think that guidance has to happen before we act. And sometimes guidance, often, maybe always, I don't know, jury's still out on that one for me, still working that one out. And I'll let you decide for yourselves. Sometimes, maybe always, often anyways, guidance happens in the action itself. So it's not usually something that we can figure out beforehand. As far as I can tell, I hate to talk in absolutes, but as far as I can tell, the mind is always the last to know. And I'm certainly not the only one to think that. So by the time you think you have the guidance in play, it's actually, and you're mentally trying to coordinate it, it's actually already happened through the lens of the nervous system and the body. There's already been it's already been in motion. It's already been in action. So the mind loves to think that it's in charge of cause. And I'm going to suggest not so much. I'm going to suggest the mind notices the effect. And that's kind of a humbling thing for the mind to take in. And the mind usually doesn't love that. However, initially, it does give the mind a place to land, because it's actually not the one running the show or coordinating all those actions. It's actually the one drinking in and receiving the nourishment of the body. It actually gets to be held by the container of the body. Going back to that fourth, sixth house interplay, it actually gets to allow for the mind to rest within the body, which is all defined by the basic consciousness of embodiment. Okay. I feel like I could talk about embodiment for a very long time, so I'm just trying to restrain myself. Before I geek out, we could spend hours on that. I might create that course at some point. I think you'll probably hear me talk about it a lot in the coming times. I won't limit myself. So amongst that all, it's linking into the body, mind, awareness, around being able to redirect without necessarily movement happening. It's going to sound like I'm contradicting myself for a moment. But those times in which we feel a sense of redirection happening, but not that you've actually taken even any action on it yet. So this is happening before the mind, before the body even registers it. It's coming from a place that happens prior to all of that, which is in your awareness. And the way that shows up in the body is often a sense of, it can feel like excitement, or it might register as nausea. And in particular, it often registers as nausea because there's a sense of, this is something new that's happening and we haven't been here before. And the new is often considered a bit of a threat initially to the old survival patterns that are held within the brainstem. So this is a long-winded way potentially of saying that we're heading into the brainstem, and we're working with the connection of awareness into the survival patterns that are held throughout the brainstem. So this is like the seed of where all of your fight, flight, all of your patterns of freeze, etc., begin from a consciousness standpoint. Yeah. And I kind of have my foot pretty strongly in both worlds. I really love the somatic polyvagal world, and also trying to marry that with the consciousness of what comes in alignment with that all is it's been like this fascinating intersectionality of study for me over the past 7 years or so. Anywho, so this is like the seeds of those patterns that can begin to unwind, can begin to begin to in awareness soften, begin to be held from a place of this isn't so personal that my body is responding in these ways, which lightens the load through awareness, not so much through you having to do anything about it or take action about it, but to trust that the guidance of however your personal system needs to respond will happen through the action that's just actively unfolding through your physiology, through the flow of your how your body is moving on a day-to-day basis. And not that you need to move differently, it's just already unfolding in that way. And the sense of the nausea comes from a little bit of a grinding of the gears of thinking that, you know, as I redirect change, as something different happens, as something new comes on board, there's a sense of nausea because there's like this threat to the part of your brainstem that's held things in check in a very particular way for a very long time, that's kept you alive. Anything else is like potentially going to not do that. It could be a danger to the system. So for this particular pattern of how that's been held, this is like the core of all those patterns. We need to do a couple of things. One, we're gonna run a cellular repair on your brainstem. And as we do that, we're gonna link it into the hypothalamus, which regulates your base states, your base autonomic states, your states of how it is your temperature is in your body. Sometimes that can move around a little bit in particular, menopause, or with their stress in the system. We can feel like we're moving between hot and cold and we can't regulate our temperature very well. It also is like the base regulation point of your overall heart rhythm, your heart rate, your blood pressure, your breath rate, your roughly your other sort of set points in the body, the things that regulate your basic physiological homeostasis that are held here. And as we work with this, it's working with those places where you feel like I just have the emotion of grief. I don't have quite like the story yet, but there's this place where you just feel like there's grief and you can't really quite name why. It's like, oh, this is maybe why I can't put it together. It's the points where you feel grief without explanation. And that can be a little bit confusing. So sometimes our mind and our body will leap to make up a story about it. And sometimes we're actually just meant to have that sense of grief happening. It's like there's an awareness of grief that's supposed to actually be there. It's supposed to be this force of helping things to disperse, helping things to release, helping things to let go as you move throughout your life. You can't possibly get whatever it is you're looking for unless you're willing to let go of something. And this sense of loss that's happening, it's like a constant background note that's always there, but sometimes you tune into it more than others. And we often make up a personal story of why that's happening to us, rather than just being okay with the fact that grief exists. So it's working with, I'm going to call it the mysteriousness behind the grief sensations, emotions, recognitions, however we want to label that, and the stories that we make up about it, rather than being able to just simply accept or surrender into or be with the grief that's there. And because of that, there's all sorts of different stories that you all have. And that might show up, it looks like significantly in the form of, like, why am I not doing better for myself? And the judgment that we hold towards ourselves for not being different in our experience of life. So whether that's like we criticize ourselves for how we look, we criticize for ourselves for how we're acting. We're criticizing ourselves for how it is we feel about our internal being. There's some form of a critical nature here. In psychology, just to meld all the worlds together, they point to, this is more Jungian in nature, They point to the experience of the inner critic being louder in times where there wasn't sufficient paternal guidance from the father. And as we've sort of worked with finding guidance from your prefrontal cortex, there's enough space, there's enough bandwidth now for that pain, that suffering that happens through that ache of not having sufficient paternal guidance, not having sufficient information structure to guide you, which we've already also worked with in the sixth house to get more guidance. We're working with setting the stage at a consciousness level for that inner critic, that part of you that so easily goes into motion, to be met in a new way. So, that inner critic that's taking up some space inside of each and every human I know, self included, I'm going to invite you to imagine that this part of you can actually be met and received, maybe even welcomed. And if that's possible, maybe even thanks. And say something like, hey, thanks for being here. Thanks for doing all the things that you do for me, even if I'm still learning what those are. What if you could take the risk and assume that whatever this part is doing, it's doing so for a really good reason? And it jumped in to protect you when you didn't have the protection that you needed, or nourish you when you didn't have the nourishment that you needed. Or maybe something else, or maybe a flavor of both. And whatever this inner critic has stemmed from, I'm betting it wasn't easeful circumstances that it developed in. And I just want to let it know, like, thank you for doing the best you could with what you had at the time. And just for right now, you don't have to work so hard. You don't have to work so hard. I've got other tools, wisdom, resources available. And you might even notice how old this part of you is. You might have an age. It's usually quite young. So if you're getting anything older than like 15, 16, 18, anything older than a teenager, see if there's a younger age. And it might be quite young. It could be literally days old. It could be from the womb. It could be a few years old. And whatever ages you're drawn to, or the ages where it may have evolved, or it may have had just a significant uptick because of the circumstances, not feeling like you had protection or nourishment around you, and betting it was protection. And amongst all of that, this little one is like a small one trying to do the job of an adult and not getting the care it needed as a child. So I invite you to actually care for it like a child, to give it the attention, the care that it's been longing for. And as we do that, I'm going to connect it into your prefrontal cortex, your high heart, along with your regular heart. Along with, interestingly enough, the vitality that comes from your sexual chakra. And let it know that it gets to be held in relationship in a way that it's never likely ever experienced before. It gets to be held with a certain amount of care and reverence. And it may take a little bit for that part of you to really drink that in. It might even feel kind of raw and vulnerable. So the invitation here is to go as slow as this part needs. This part doing the very best it could in the process of doing all that it's done for you has likely created some level of experience, I'll say, of grief. Or, and likely, and because it's done a certain job for you, it didn't actually get its needs met, which creates a certain level of grief. And because it stepped in and did what it did, it changed the course of your life. So there may be grief around the unfolding of what's transpired in your past. And all those frequencies of grief, we're going to marry together under the theme of reconciliation. And then we're going to run lymphatic drainage through the lung and its meridian, through the large intestine and its meridian. Lymphatic drainage, cleaning out our toxins, our gunk, our waste, our low self-esteem, our overthinking, or overanalyzing, through the lung, large intestine, which are our centers, our primary centers where grief gets metabolized and utilized for all of its healthy roles in life. And we're essentially draining out any times where that inner critic and the interplay of how it unfolded in your life and any grief that you've had about that has led to low self-esteem, overthinking, or overanalyzing. And then we're simply balancing the metal element, which works with grief, to the element of fire, which works with our connection to our, again, relationality, our relationships that are meant to sort of expand us out of our inner world. Which are meant to healthily inform us of other options, opportunities, availabilities. And if we've spent our lives trying to protect ourselves in relationship because they weren't as nourishing as they could have been, then we also protect ourselves from the possibilities that might be present in those other points of ideas, views, and we create division for ourselves, and we create division in this world between us and others. To try to stay safe, to try to keep as much peace as we possibly can, but incidentally, it goes hand in hand with the creating the opposite of that. So the intentions, as good as they can be, are misguided by these little aged parts. And it creates a certain fragmentation versus the awareness of the underlying nature that is also never missing, which has never been lost. The peace, which has been here the whole time. And that is linking again into the brainstem, which often registers things that are missing or void in our life. It's the area where we traverse the internal void, so to speak, or the spiritual void, if you've heard of people referencing the void. Our experiences, maybe not quite the right word. Awareness isn't even it either, but this is where the language gets really tricky. Knowingness of the traverse of that terrain, of the territory of the void. For some of us, it might feel like, if we touch it with a sense of prematurity or lack of mature guidance, it can feel like depression, and it can accentuate lots of mental states of fragmentation versus supporting the connection to the sense of wholeness for simplicity. For ease, I'll label it as such. This territory, the back of the skull, the occipital sort of bony structure that forms a plate into the base of the skull where it joins onto the spine. This territory becomes like the internal cave where one goes to surrender into the inner. Internal dark landscape to find the expansion of the world, which is far beyond that of our personal self and is guided by awareness itself. We are touching every lens of spirituality and psychology today in one whole hour. Oh my goodness. We're covering a lot of ground. We're running a cellular repair. It's going into the family lines, restoring cells back to their fullest potential of health. We're going through dad's side, and we're going back five generations. It's not an emotional frequency, not surprising of grief. And it's looking at grief in particular around, again, its relationships, its relationality. Houses seven and eight are social houses. I've often talked about house five being like the social house. House seven is very strong in relationality as it works with partnerships and relationships. And then house eight is working with relationality in its own unique flavor that's maybe less obvious, less apparent. House eight is very much the house of intensity and passion. It's the house of being able to be with suffering. And if we can be with our own suffering, we can be with others' suffering. So house eight gives us the capacity to be with others and hold their suffering with equal levels of intensity as our own. And as we do that, there's a depth of thinking that this happens just to me. And it allows for a certain rebirth to happen in connection to a unified understanding of relationality, into a sense of, in a very potentially simpler way of saying this, of unity itself. It happens through the sense of dying to the idea that life is personal, that's happening to just us, when these same rhythms, these same patterns, these same parts, these same experiences, these same feelings are happening to every other person here. I've been saying for years and years, and pretty much every body talk, anything I've taught now, that we're all far more alike than we are different, which is why these maps can not precisely describe the terrain of the individual, yet speak to the overall conditions found in humans, period. The maps of body talk, the maps of all the other modalities that are out there. It's why it can connect to some degree with every human out there, as long as they're open to thinking about life in those ways. It does require some level of openness. And with that, we're actually linking this all into the body. We're linking this into the hips. We have to talk about the major seven chakras. There's also 21 minor chakras from a body talk sense. We think of these energy centers happening in 21 other spots. I'm not going to name them all right now. But there's two in the hips. And the healthy role of the ones in the hips are our stability. It's your foundation. It's like the place where that implantation foundation begins to become somatically held within the body, and it creates a trust or lack thereof in our life processes. It also creates a flexibility or lack thereof in our capacity to move forward, as well as how it is we feel secure in our sexuality. How it is we feel secure in our vitality would be another way to word that. How is it we feel about being fully alive? Yeah. And if there's a sense of wobble or fear about that, it'll show up as instability, insecurity. There'll be avoidance. There'll be anxiety. There'll be a lack of capacity to attune. And in the face of that, we often end up, I should be the poster child for this one, of over-functioning, of thinking that we need to read the room and we need to do that for everybody around us, and that we need to do it for ourselves in relationship to them, and we need to figure all the things out from all the different angles for everybody around us. I feel like I could write an article on that, and I might at some point. I've been in a very creative phase these days, been doing a little bit more writing, and the idea is that overfunctioning, well, A, it depletes our system, and we do it out of usually sheer protection because we are having some level of fear around our foundation and how much we can trust life. And we're linking the hips through to the head. This is less from a body talk perspective, and this actually comes from Gabrielle Roth, who is behind Five Rhythms. She creates an awareness throughout the body with different movements. And I actually haven't studied her work directly. I've just watched bits and pieces of her here and there over the years. And she describes the head as like the last center of control. So when you're moving your body, we can often let our legs or our arms, our spine begin to have freedom to move. But our head, that head often creates this last sort of a stage of control. It often doesn't surrender to the flow coming through the feet. It doesn't surrender with ease often. And it's like the last barricade of control. Held from a body talk sense, we would say that's held heavily in the jaws, heavily in the TMJ through to the masseter muscles and all the different muscles that hang out here, the pterygoids being the big ones in particular that work with control and govern the movement of the masseter and the TMJ joint. So all of those layers of control held here are out of a sense usually a protection. It's like the head trying to protect the body because the head hasn't had a safe place to be held within the body. As we work with the relationship between trusting life in the hips and looking at the control in the head, it can create all sorts of charge in the nervous system, all sorts of overactivation in the nervous system, to the point where we can get so overactivated that the whole thing goes kaput and it collapses, and it creates a fatigue in the system. Excuse me, a shutdown in the system. And we're just simply connecting all of that into the reciprocal. Back of skull, back of pelvis, sacrum, occiput, which are meant to be your centers of parasympathetic input. Occiput to sacrum governs our capacity to rest. If you think about just laying your head back on a pillow behind you, and letting the whole body eventually come to rest and unwind. And we're linking that into the base chakra, which is not terribly well known for its center of restfulness. It's in fact a place where we can also find the very last barricade to actually being fine, to find yourself in rest due to the fear that keeps us moving, the fear that keeps us restless. And here we're releasing the consciousness of agitation and the learned response of having to be restless and the grief that that causes of having to keep going when you really just want to stop, when you really just want to come to stillness, when you really are complete with whatever is happening, but somehow it's keeping going and you're caught in loops and cycles of it all. And we're running a body chemistry here on the intolerance to your own natural rhythm of stillness, one that you learned by watching others, by others telling you you had to keep going when you didn't really want to, by others telling you to override yourself in the face of what you were actually feeling, often through well-meaning intentions. Yet there's a reason we call it toxic positivity. And we're running a permissions, and the words are just simply, you get to feel the full spectrum of human emotion. Not you have to. You get to feel the full spectrum of human emotion. We live in a world where we're taught to avoid our feeling. Have a headache, take a pill, run to the fridge, have something to eat, go online, doom scroll. We have lots of ways, but it's interesting. I'm going to invite us to, and I think you've heard about me speak about this before, be the buffalo, to turn into the storm of whatever is there, whatever is being felt, whatever is alive in your body. That's actually the place where vitality happens. And feelings require about a space of a minute and a half to make their way through the system. And if they don't get turned towards, then they'll stay for a lifetime. So your homework in the coming days, as you find space to play with it as much or as little as you like, is to give your feelings space, just a temporary shelter space of 90 seconds to be honored, to be felt, without having to do anything about them, without having to figure anything out about them, but to meet them sheerly with awareness that they're there and they get to be there. And they literally like carve a little bit of elbow room, metaphorically speaking. Give them some space. Give them a foundation to be held. In the same way that you don't want to be fixed or changed or managed, neither do your feelings. They too want just simply room to be here. As we link that into the base chakra, it actually gives rise for the base chakra to do its healthy role, which is that of practical action. And then we're linking that into houses 7 and 8 to find that practicality in relationality, in the very core of your bones, in the very core of your fluid body, and in the very core of how it is you're actually wired. By your water element, by your house 8, by your kidney meridian, by your nervous system, to move, to be. To feel. And we're tapping this out here. Invitation to breathe, invitation to receive. Giving that a slow, deep breath. Calling in on that resource if desired. Got a song. I'm a couple minutes over time. It's about a 4.5 minute song. So just know that. And if you need to leave, thank you for being here. The recording will have it. And I'll send the link into the chat feature right away too. So thank you so much, and I will press play here. Invitation to let yourself really rest in the music. Invitation to be held. Thank you for being here exactly as you are, and thank you for carrying the medicine that you do in each and every one of you. Mwah, mwah, mwah. Om Shanti, 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 peace, peace, peace. For those of you that can join us on Monday at 9 a.m., I look forward to working together again. And after that, we have the holidays off until January 6th, I believe, is the next Wednesday. So we'll catch you on the fly. Thank you all, and have a wonderful holiday season. And or, you know, be present to whatever feelings arise for you is what I mean by that. And happy to support you. I am working over the holiday season, so if you need to reach out. Okay, loves. Mwah. Bye for now.